Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, February 15th, 2024. Border Patrol seizes 50 pounds of marijuana in Brewster County by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Brewster County. Last Sunday, Customs and Border Protection personnel seized just over 50 pounds of marijuana during a motor vehicle stop on Highway 385 south of Marathon. The case is now being investigated by the Drug Enforcement Administration. Around 9 a.m. on the morning of February 4th, agents from the Alpine Station performed a welfare check on a vehicle stopped by the side of the highway just south of the Marathon checkpoint. The canine alerted to bundles in the trunk of the vehicle, which were later tested by law enforcement and found to contain marijuana. A total of 530.29 pounds were recovered, with a street value of $424,232. Brewster County law enforcement has seen at least one major marijuana bust annually since the pandemic, with a spike of three incidents in 2020. A particularly large encounter in December 2022 recovered 1,886 pounds of marijuana. In June of 2023, deputies in Terlingua recovered over 2,000 pounds of the narcotic smuggled in a horse trailer. Rates of seizures by Customs and Border Protection have gone up and down over the past few years. Reflecting Brewster County's numbers, fiscal year 2020 saw a spike up to 14,022 pounds of marijuana nationwide. That number plummeted in FY 2021, with an annual nationwide count of 3,584 pounds. In FY 2022, numbers were roughly doubled to 7,330 pounds. So far this fiscal year, 4,705 pounds have been recovered. Big Bend Sector Chief Agent Walter Slosar praised the Alpine Border Patrol Station for their work on the case. Our agents, as part of their border security mission, interdict illegal narcotics being transported across the border intended for the interior of the country. The work that they do to disrupt transnational criminal organizations' drug smuggling operations is vital to protecting our citizens from these illegal substances, he wrote in a press release. Staff photo by Maisie Crow. Marfa High School juniors Mia Dominguez and Jessica Diaz gather flowers and greenery to make an arrangement for Valentine's Day as part of the new agribusiness class called Marfa Blooms. New water meters, USO bathrooms, and police funding upcoming while council hears plea for Gaza resolution. By Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Marfa City Council members met this week to tackle regular city business, including new automatic water meters, visitor center improvements, grants for the Marfa Police Department, and to hear from a group of citizens calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. Automatic water meters. City Council members voted to put out a request for proposals, RFP, for a company to conduct a citywide water meter overhaul this year. The city's current meters are old and break often, causing issues for the two public works employees that read around 2,000 meters a month for utility billing. While the entire cost of the project will be determined through the bidding process, the city budgeted around $100,000 for the meter upgrades this year. The RFP is geared towards a full-service company who will ideally bid and be selected by April, City Manager Mandy Rohn said. The new smart meters will be automatic as opposed to manually read, resulting in more accurate reads and less arduous work for the already overstretched public works employees, said Mayor Manny Baez. The main thing is, with reading meters, it's not good on your knees, it's very time-consuming, and there's always inaccuracies, just human error, Baez said. So this will hopefully alleviate this issue. Rohn said the upgrades will be time-consuming and detail-oriented, ensuring each meter is switched over correctly, but the new system will be turnkey, fully integrated with the city's existing technology, and the company they hire will train city staff on all aspects of the new meters. How do we upload it? How do we check for errors? Rohn said. They will come in with the complete package, so we're not going to have to be guessing and hoping that we do it right. Visitor Center upgrades. The USO building will gain new outdoor bathrooms soon as council members voted to approve the purchase of a prefab ADA-accessible bathroom unit for $181,000. Baeza said the city has been aware of the need for outdoor restrooms for some time, and it was great to finally make progress on seeing them installed. Without outdoor bathrooms, people looking to just rent out the USO's outdoor pavilion must rent out the entire facility to have access to indoor restrooms. Rohn said outdoor toilets, which will be placed on the alley side of the pavilion, will be funded with hotel occupancy tax, HOT funds. The Marfa Saturday Market has been displaced by rental events taking place at the USO in the past, but making the two rental spaces separate should alleviate some conflict, Tourism Director Jennifer Connors and Baeza said. It's going to be great to have restrooms out there. Instead of having conflicting schedules if the USO is rented that weekend, Baeza said, this is just trying to alleviate the situation out there, and we're trying to make that space more welcoming. Marfa PD grants. Council members passed several resolutions that will make it possible for city administrators and the Marfa Police Department to go out for federal and state grant programs. They passed a resolution allowing Marfa PD to participate in Operation Stone Garden, a federal border security initiative for 2024-2025, as well as several other resolutions for state law enforcement grant programs. Instead of Stone Garden and the Lone Star, which we've kind of used to cover everything and which are also very paperwork heavy, this year we decided to go for a couple of individual grants that would supply the PD with any different types of equipment, Rohn said. The state grants Marfa PD will apply for include $23,000 ballistic shields grant, a $13,000 rifle-resistant body armor grant, and a $25,000 body camera grant. The department's current body cameras are older, refurbished cameras with subpar video quality, Rohn said. The other items are designed for active shooter situations and come with training. I hope that we absolutely never, ever have to use it, said Rohn, but this grant funding is available. I think we should do what we can to arm our officers to keep them as safe as possible, which will keep our citizens as safe as possible. Gaza. Resident Eileen Miles, one of four citizens present to call for the ceasefire, addressed council members during the public comment period. They relayed recent horrors from the news on the war in Gaza, citing the statistic that of 30,000 killed, 10,000 were children. We've been meeting as a group and talking, and we're all horrified and disturbed and don't want to support this as citizens, don't want to support this as human beings, don't want to watch this and want it to stop, Miles said. And the question is, what can we do? Miles said they were against the state of Texas spending billions of dollars on bonds supporting Israel and asked that city council members consider what other cities across the country are considering, a citywide resolution supporting a ceasefire in Gaza. No city in Texas has done it yet, Miles said. I feel like there's lots of Texans who don't want to see this kind of death happening. This is an opportunity for us to say something strongly and powerfully. Miles said the group is starting a petition to bring more evidence of local support to the council, and it held a Valentine's Day bake sale this week to raise funds to get one family out of Gaza. They urged city council members to take action within the next couple of weeks, because if they wait too long, there could be no Palestinians left. Resident Kate Sturchy followed Miles' comments, stating the citywide ceasefire resolution was a baseline moral gesture. People on all sides of the war supported out of a desire to not see more civilians, women and children, innocent people, dying. I think if Marfa could come together as a city and say no more, I think that really could be a powerful gesture in a very large state that does hold a lot of financial sway in the country, Sturchy said. Per public meeting laws and procedures, council members did not respond to the citizen request right away. In a follow-up with the Big Bend Sentinel, the group said they intend to approach other local municipalities with the resolution idea. Roan said the group will have to follow the usual procedure to get an item on the city council agenda, have a council member sponsor the item so it may be publicly discussed at the next meeting. Half of county candidates continue to break campaign finance laws. By Rob D'Amico. Rob at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. State laws requiring county candidates to name a campaign treasurer and report contributions and expenditures over certain dollar limits are routine for candidates in more populous counties in Texas. But Presidio County candidates have a poor history of filing the required documents. A review of filings for the most recent deadline, 30 days before the primary election, revealed that half of the county candidates have failed to follow the laws on campaign finance reports. State election laws require candidates to name a treasurer, which can be the candidate, at the start of their campaign by filling out a simple one-page form and submitting it to the county clerk's office. Then candidates are required to report total contributions and expenditures, along with details of those transactions for some dollar amounts, on forms submitted to the county clerk at certain deadlines throughout the year. Candidates can report on their treasurer designation that they don't plan to accept or spend more than $1,080 in their campaigns, and thus can avoid filing other contribution reports. As of the Big Bend Sentinel review Tuesday, 7 days after the February 5th deadline for the latest report, only the following candidates met their obligations: Nancy Aravala and Norma Valenzuela, tax assessor-collector candidates, Blair Park and Rod Pontone, county attorney candidates, Ruben Armendariz and Deirdre Hisler, commissioner candidates, and Aiden Pug-Kovos, constable candidate. Those not following the law include Tubercio Butch Acosta, Jose Luis Cabezuela, Irma Carrasco Sanchez, Samuel Sanchez, and Francisco Frankie Ortiz, commissioner candidates, and Esteban Steve Marquez and Rafael Bentley Acosta, constable candidates. The Texas Ethics Commission, which governs campaign finance laws, can fine candidates for not meeting requirements or deadlines. For instance, its rules note, The fine for a report due 8 days before an election is $500 for the first day the report is late, and $100 for each day thereafter that the report is late, up to a maximum fine of $10,000. However, someone must first file a complaint before the commission before it investigates infractions, and often the commission will reduce fines, which usually end up in the $500 to $1,500 range. Campaign finance reports are intended to keep the public informed of large donations to candidates and to ensure their expenditures are legitimate. However, several candidates were unaware of the requirements when reminded by the Sentinel of the deadline for the report due 30 days before the primary election. The reminder resulted in some candidates fulfilling their required filings, although with a couple late, while others still did not file.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, February 15, 2024. The Fort Stockton Independent School District's Agricultural Science Ag Barn discussion will make its way to Fort Stockton City Hall Thursday night when Superintendent Gabriel Samora will make a presentation at the City Council on the proposed location of the new ag barn the district plans to build. The board decided in January that it wanted to build a new facility on school property adjacent to the high school, but that would require variances from the city because of livestock located within city limits. The new facility would include an expanded corral, pens, feed lockers, and 1,000 square feet of classroom space. Zamora said January 22nd that the district was looking at the area where the school holds the homecoming bonfire or the area east of the softball fields, which would provide students easier access from the school. I talked to some of the other board members and different people in the community who liked the idea, Zamora said, adding that City Manager Rodriguez thought the city could accommodate them because it's far enough away and there can be exemptions made if the City Council approves it. The first place to start is a letter of intent asking the city if they would grant us permission to look at one of those spots out there. And if so, we've got it already kind of told to us that we can have something built, ag barn, as early as summer. In other action, tonight, the council will hear updates from Alex Gonzalez with BioCatters regarding Blue Ridge Farms and Economic Development Executive Director Remy Ramos, who is scheduled to give his quarterly report of the first quarter of the fiscal year. The council is expected to discuss an ordinance of the City of Fort Stockton establishing an exemption from ad valorem taxes for qualifying child care facility properties, as authorized by the Texas Property Tax Code. The code provides that the city may adopt the exemption authorized as a percentage of the appraised value of the property. The percentage specified by the governing body may not be less than 50%. They will discuss resolution number 24, authorizing the city to file a grant application for the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant Program, criminal justice grant. Discuss a resolution authorizing the city to file grant application number 4905102 to the Office of the Governor for the Operation Stone Garden. They will discuss a resolution authorizing the city to file a grant application with the Office of the Secretary, U.S. Department of Treasury, Transportation, raise grant opportunity. They'll discuss a 10-foot-wide utilities easement agreement for land east of 4th Street. They'll discuss a memorandum of understanding between the city and Texas Disposal Systems, allowing TDS to divert excess municipal solid waste to the City of Fort Stockton landfill. The City of Alpine has a landfill that serves an area between Fort Stockton and Big Bend region, reaching into Balmoray and Fort Davis. However, the tonnage from this region exceeds the allowable MSW of the Alpine landfill. Excess MSW tonnage is currently diverted to a landfill in Presidio. TDS seeks to instead divert this tonnage to the Fort Stockton landfill, which is closer than Presidio. TDS sends an average of 2 tons of waste from the Texas Department of Corrections prison in Fort Stockton. This agreement does not change or alter these hauls from the TDS of Corrections Fort Stockton unit. They discuss lease proposal for approximately 360 acres of land near the old city landfill. They'll discuss a request for proposals for repair and renovation of city streets. They'll discuss a traffic study off West Rio Street from Hornbeck to Interstate 10. They'll discuss a appointment of one Keep Historic Fort Stockton Beautiful board member and one local Landmark board member to replace Ember Renteria. The agenda is subject to change. The meeting is set for 5:30 Thursday at Fort Stockton City Hall. Waco man runs from the cops, killed in an I-10 crash. A 32-year-old Waco man was killed when he was struck by a semi after fleeing from Pecos County deputies. Mark Anthony Lopez of Waco was driving a Jeep Liberty and was pulled over by Pecos County Sheriff's deputy near Sheffield for a routine traffic violation. According to the report, Lopez then fled from the deputy, resulting in a high-speed chase westbound on I-10. At mile marker 320, Lopez attempted to make a U-turn to go back eastbound on the interstate, where a 2007 Peterbilt with a trailer was heading eastbound and struck the Jeep. The semi tried to avoid the Jeep and swerved into the shoulder and into the south barrow ditch, but the Jeep struck the semi. Lopez was pronounced dead at the scene, and Morales was transported to Iran Memorial Hospital with minor injuries. The incident was investigated by the Texas Highway Patrol in Fort Stockton and remains under investigation. Recreation Board opposes coaches' suspension. The Fort Stockton Intergovernment Recreational Board met in a special session and upheld the suspension of a Recreation League youth basketball coach after a February 3rd incident in which the coach pulled his team off the court and quit the game at the start of the fourth quarter. His team of the Division II Spurs was behind 29-6 to a team from Imperial in a game held at the Fort Stockton gym, and Terrazas believed the referees were not calling the game fairly. Recreation Director Ruby Bernal was filling in as one of the two referees for the contest due to a shortage of officials that day and suspended Terrazas for quitting the game before it was completed. Terrazas appealed the suspension, hence the Thursday meeting. Several parents and members of the team were in attendance in support of Terrazas. "I did issue a suspension for the coach," Bernal told the board, adding that coaches and fans were making comments and remarks about the officiating, which she said is normal. This particular contest was heated. One individual in the stands was removed early in the first half for his behavior, and the official reminded him not to start anything with us. As the game continued, the environment was pleasant as spectators cheered and refrained from sharing any inappropriate or rude comments. Bernal added that Terrazas questioned calls throughout the first half, but that she didn't feel offended or discouraged and understood that he was advocating for his team's interest. She said that in the fourth quarter, he called a timeout, walked out on the court, and said he was going to forfeit. "I was confused and questioned why. He replied, if we're not going to get the calls underneath, we're not going to play." He added that she consulted the game book and said the foul count was even and that it was a clean game, and you can't just quit. Bernal said she reminded the coach that the kids signed up to play and the parents paid to watch their kids play, so he couldn't quit. After speaking to one of the game administrators on Saturday and several board members the following Monday, she made the decision to suspend Terrazas for the final two Saturdays of the season. "When you sign up to coach, it's an agreement you're going to stick it out for the remainder of the season. It's an agreement that you will help out this program. That's the whole reason for having the volunteer coaches, to benefit this program and the kids." His reasoning for forfeiting and quitting, I don't think, was tolerable for me to allow him to continue to coach. If he's going to quit, we can find someone else to fill in and take over the team. Terrazza said that he doesn't think the kids are being helped by letting them play basketball the way it was being directed. It's got to be addressed at some point. I hate that it's me having to be up here. Terrazza said the game was getting very sloppy and somebody could have gotten hurt the way we were being called. It was very ugly. For me, to have a parent get kicked out says a lot. I felt this is not basketball. This is not what the kids need to be learning. I don't feel we're helping our kids with these refs. Terrazas and the parents at the meeting said that there needs to be better training for the referees and asked Bernal how long she has had trouble finding refs, to which she replied forever, adding that it's just not the league that has trouble finding officials. I say that if you're going to complain about it, then get out there and do it, said board member and president Flo Garcia. It's just the way it is. I'm sure the rec department tries the best they can, but I guarantee you not even one-tenth of the parents that go out there because their kids are playing try to officiate or try to do anything. This is where we're at. Ruby does the best she can, and if y'all don't like it, step up. That's all there is to it. Board member and Fort Stockton Mayor Paul Casillas said he has been a coach and an official that has called junior high and high school, and he would rather be a coach. It doesn't get any better fan-wise when we're on the court, Casillas said, adding that to get better officials and pay them more will cost the department a lot of money. We don't want to move up the price for the kids participating because you feel the need for all those certified officials. The kids officiating games now have a little training and get better as the game goes on. She added that saying that as an experienced official, he misses things. I don't think that the issue is the officiating, in my opinion, and I've coached a lot and I've not liked a lot of the stuff that the officials are calling, but I would never quit on my kids. And as a parent in the stands, I would not allow any coach to teach my kid to quit. I'm not going to tell anybody how to parent, but I'm not going to say I'm not in agreement at all with the coach quitting in the middle of the game because he doesn't like the officiating. Claudia Jimenez, one of the parents of the Spurs, said she understood what the mayor was saying because she's done sports for a very long time. This is not our first rodeo, but it was not a fair game whatsoever. It was never equal for both teams. We can't prove that, of course. I, as a parent, don't believe that he quit on our children. I think that he made a stand for our children because they were being treated unfairly, which I appreciate. That because if us as parents and fans try to speak our mind, we get kicked out, we get warned. I can stand here and speak for the rest of my parent team that we support what he did because our kids weren't being treated fairly and we didn't see it as him quitting on our children. And then it's added that people don't want to volunteer to coach or officiate because when someone is willing to voice or stand for something they believe, this is the treatment they get. Board member Gonzalez said she's there to protect the shareholder, the parents, and the majority rule. The parents want to keep their coach, who is also a school board member. Board member Nathan Reeves said that the league is training the kids for junior and senior high school. He noted a recent Fort Stockton game against Greenwood that had unbalanced officiating. How would it look for the school to just walk completely out of the game and not finish the game? After further discussion, Casillas moved to uphold the suspension, and Garcia seconded it. The motion passed 6-1, with Gonzalez casting the dissenting vote. The Intergovernment Recreation Board consists of 2 Fort Stockton Independent School District Board members, 2 City Council members, 2 Pecos County Commissioners, and 1 at-large member. Pecos County Senior Center Potluck is Friday. The Pecos County Senior Citizens Center will host a potluck on Friday the 16th at noon. The meal will be grilled hamburgers with potato salad. Everyone is asked to bring side dishes or desserts. The potluck is open to all senior citizen members and will be a great way to celebrate President's Day weekend. The center is located at 1010 West 14th Street and is open to all Pecos County residents 55 and older. You may join by paying annual dues of only $5. For more information, contact the Pecos County Senior Citizens Center at 336-2302. new graduate anthropology program at Sol Ross, slated for fall semester. The Center for Big Bend Studies at Sol Ross announces the creation of the new Master of Arts in Anthropology program starting this fall. After months of development, the launch of this groundbreaking graduate program represents a new direction for increasing students' engagement in research at CBBS and the university. We're excited to offer this new opportunity to our students, said Vice President Bernie Cattens. The creation of an anthropology graduate program complements the current focus on conservation and habitat management at Sol Ross, producing students who are better informed to meet the diverse challenges of implementing effective natural and cultural research programs. The MA program comprises a 36-credit thesis-based degree plan with 24 credits of core curriculum and 12 elective credits, six which must be in anthropology. We project admitting six students each fall semester to maintain small cohort sizes and low student-to-professor ratios, said Director Byron Schroeder. We want to provide the best possible graduate school experience for our students. All required courses will be routinely offered on a 1 or 2 year rotation with an expected 2 year completion. Coursework will emphasize hands-on training to familiarize students with the application of different methods and technologies for the appropriate setting. We will utilize a major asset of our university, our proximity to millions of acres of undeveloped land that stretches across the dynamic environments of the Big Bend, containing world-class cultural resources. The establishment of the graduate program at Sol Ross, coinciding with the reestablishment of the anthropology minor, occurs at an optimal time to meet the growing demand for archaeologists. Student work will be conducted in collaboration with CBBS to produce world-class archaeological research. Our students will leave the program with the skills and expertise they need to be competitive and flexible in a diverse job market. Sol Ross offers one of the most affordable graduate degrees in Texas. CBBS is actively seeking funding to provide additional student support and graduate assistantships. Accreditation is pending and expected from the Texas Board of Higher Education and the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools Commission on Colleges. Interested students should contact the General Anthropology email, anthropology@solross.edu, or reach out to specific faculty members with questions regarding the MA program and the graduate student research opportunities. General information about education opportunities is available at cbbs.solross.edu/education. Applicants must meet the standard SRSU requirements for graduate admissions. Additional requirements for the anthropology program are 3 letters of recommendation, curriculum vitae or resume, a 1-page statement of intent describing why you want to attend SRSU, your proposed thesis research topic, and preferred faculty mentor, and the impact of an MA degree on your anthropology career. Send all application materials to anthropology@solross.edu. Once the application portal opens, staff will assist prospective students in completing their final application. To learn more about the Center of Big Bend Studies, visit cbbs.solross.edu, established by Sol Ross State University in 1987, the Center for Big Bend Studies promotes archaeological and historical research in the Big Bend region of Texas and northern Mexico. For more than 35 years, CBBS has conducted studies and provided educational opportunities for university students, the public, and outreach researchers. CBBS is committed to the recovery, protection, and sharing of this region's rich cultural legacy through dynamic programs of research, education, public outreach, and publication.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, February 8th. Monahans advances to state meet. Girls runner-up, boys third at regionals. The story was written by Armando Flores. The bright lights got brighter for the Monahans High School swim team last Thursday through Saturday as they competed against representatives from 35 different schools last week at the Class 4A and Under Region 1 Swimming and Diving Championships in Andrews. What evolved was an exceptional performance by the Green Wave, as Monahans was once called decades ago, as the Lady Lobos and Lobos managed to make some noise in Region 1, as they managed to send swimmers in 20 of the 24 events to San Antonio by securing 7 automatic bids with top 2 finishes and the remaining with at-large bids, having the fastest times over all 4 regions. Monahans head coach Jay Thomas said, quote, "Well, it was a great meet, and we reached several goals. But one goal is still looming. As Bum Phillips once said, we are knocking on the door, and next year we will kick it in." As some of you know, that was a very bold statement, and it didn't work out the way he had planned. I will say that it is definitely our mindset, and we will do everything possible to try and accomplish that goal. End quote. Individual races were not the only standout performances for the team. Monahans also made their mark in the team breakdowns as well. The Lady Lobos finished as the Region 1 runner-up with an impressive total of 360 points. The boys' team members displayed their talent as well, securing a commendable third-place finish overall with 311 points. Their impressive performance was a mere 9 points behind Decatur High School. Andrew's squads emerged as dominant forces in each division, clinching victory with 469 points in the girls' division and a commanding 481 points in the boys' division. 20 schools were represented in the girls' division, while 15 high schools competed in the boys' division. Quote, "It's great to be a Lobo. I love everything about it and everything about our team. Our Lobo swimmers showed up and competed. We are advancing to the 4A state championships in 20 of the 24 events that we competed in this year at the regional meet. I do believe that is the most that we have ever advanced to in the state championships. We have 16 swimming and a total of 4 alternates, 2 boys and 2 girls," Thomas said. As they advanced to the Class 4A and Under Swimming and Diving Championships, the Monahans community eagerly anticipates their continued success and looks forward to cheering them on in San Antonio. Quote, "We will leave for San Antonio February 14th at 8 a.m., Thomas said. "We will have our usual great send-off and escort out of town. That is just another thing I love about our small town. We have the greatest law enforcement and first responders around. They come out and support our school every time we ask them. People from other communities are blown away by the support we receive from our send-offs," end quote. The University Interscholastic League Class 4A and Under State Swimming and Diving Championships will be held at the Northeast Independent School District's Josh Davis Natatorium in San Antonio starting at 10 a.m. on Thursday, February 15th, with finals on February 16th at 11 a.m. Deanda files for District 6 trustee. February 16th, last day to file. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Monahans Wicked Pyote ISD School Board has 2 trustee positions open for re-election in the upcoming May 4th election, District 6 and 7. Josh Schwab represents District 7, and Nancy Upchurch holds the District 6 position. A challenger, Christian Deanda, has filed to oppose Upchurch for the District 6 position. Deanda said of his recent filing, quote, "I am eager to bring new ideas to the table and am willing to work tirelessly with board members, educators, and families to find solutions for any issues that our district might face. My goal is to help bridge the gap and to focus on building a school system that parents and students as a whole are proud to be part of." End quote. Both Schwab and Upchurch have filed their intents to run for re-election. Filing began on January 17th and ends on February 16th. Anyone interested in running for school board can pick up a packet at the school administration office. Upchurch has been in office 9 years, and Schwab has represented District 7 for 2 years. School board elections are every 2 years. Election day has been set for May 4th at the MWP ISD Administration Building, 606 South Betty, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Early voting will begin April 22nd and conclude on April 30th, also at the MWP ISD Administration Building. Applications for ballot by mail should be mailed or emailed to the MWP ISD Administration Building, 606 South Betty Street, or emailed to jbailey@mwpisd.esc18.net. Last day to apply for ballot by mail must be received by Tuesday, April 23rd, by 5 p.m. Meet the candidates slated February 15th. The Monahans Chamber of Commerce will host a Meet the Candidates public forum question and answer to allow citizens to meet and get to know the local candidates. The meeting, to be held in the Ward County Event Center Lecture Hall, is scheduled for 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, February 15th, with a meet and greet with candidates beginning at 6 p.m. Travis Sawyer will be moderating the event. With the first day of early voting in person for party primaries on February 20th, the meeting is intended to allow citizens an opportunity for voters to make final choices from among the candidates. Candidates participating in the forum are, for Sheriff, Michael Franco and Ferran Valle, District Attorney Sarah Stogner, District Judge Alan Nicholas, Ward County Attorney Justin Till, Ward County Tax Assessor Vicki Heflin, Commissioner Precinct 1 Alex Luna, Guy Thames, Tino Sanchez, Commissioner Precinct 3 Bill Clayton, Billy Redmond, and Robert Vasquez, Constable 1 and 4 Ricky Allen. Candidates will be asked to introduce themselves and respond briefly to questions regarding their campaigns and interests in serving the public. There will be a mediator to assist in handling the questions. Quote, "This is a good opportunity for the citizens to ask questions about their job description and how they will be representing you, the voters of Ward County," Chamber of Commerce Director Teresa Burnett said. Mesa ordered to serve over 11 years. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The second of two Monahans men who were arrested November 2022 during simultaneous drug raids conducted in Monahans and Thorntonville has now been ordered to serve 135 months, just over 11 years, in a federal prison. Daniel Ochoa Mesa of 701 South Wilma Street appeared in front of District Judge David Counts on January 23rd to hear his fate after he pled guilty on June 14th to one count of conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute cocaine. Mesa was one of eight, six of which were not from Monahans, charged in a nine-count indictment. Anthony Bustos Sr., of 1511 South Allen, who was also named in the indictment, entered a guilty plea on September 22nd without a written plea agreement to the same charge. According to court documents, from around April 2022 up until November 2022, Meza would receive cocaine from Gilberto Hernandez to distribute, and on April 8, 2022, the defendant planned to meet Hernandez to retrieve the cocaine. However, Meza's co-defendant, Bustos, met with Hernandez at a rest area on Interstate 10 near the I-20-I-10 split to pick up both his and Meza's share of cocaine. Bustos received 21 ounces from Hernandez, 16 ounces for him to distribute, and 5 for Meza to distribute. Bustos then met with Meza to give him his portion. Later in April, Bustos met with Hernandez to pay both his and Meza's share from the sale of the cocaine. Both Bustos and Meza pled guilty to possessing 500 grams or 1.1 pounds or more of cocaine. The government also asked for the forfeiture of both Meza's and Bustos' homes because the defendants used the property to store drugs, money from sale of drugs, and money intended to purchase drugs. The items are subject to forfeiture. The forfeiture on Bustos' home was granted on September 22nd, and the government has filed a motion to move on the forfeiture of Meza's home as well. Several other individuals charged in the case have entered guilty pleas. According to court documents, Gilberto Hernandez, also known as G, age 30, was the leader of the Hernandez Drug Trafficking Organization, or DTO. From August 2021 until November 2022, the Hernandez DTO trafficked approximately 58 kilos of cocaine throughout Texas, New Mexico, and Colorado. On May 26, 2023, Hernandez pled guilty to 8 counts of possession with intent to distribute cocaine and was sentenced this week to 327 months in prison for his role in a drug trafficking organization that distributed cocaine. 4 other co-defendants of Hernandez have been sentenced, and one is awaiting sentencing. Cesar Rodarte, also known as El Gordo, age 38, of Anthony, New Mexico, after pleading guilty to 1 count of conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute cocaine, was sentenced last week to 151 months in prison. Armiro Bernal Cabello, age 45, of Fort Stockton, was sentenced on August 29, 2023, to 121 months in prison. Cabello pled guilty to 1 count of conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute cocaine. Juan Jose Mora, age 41, of Vado, New Mexico, was sentenced on May 23, 2023, to 27 months in prison. Mora pleaded guilty to 1 count of conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute cocaine. George Daniel Mendoza, age 31, of Deming, New Mexico, pled guilty to 1 count of conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute cocaine. Mendoza is set to be sentenced on February 27th. Bustos and Meza have remained in federal custody since their arrest last November. Bustos was given a bond, but remained in custody in lieu of posting that bond. Meza was originally given a bond, but in December, U.S. District Judge David Counts in Midland ruled on a motion to stay for Meza and denied his request for bond, meaning Meza had to remain in federal custody until his trial. Count said, quote, "There is no condition or combination of conditions which would reasonably assure the appearance of Meza as required and the safety of the community, and there is clear and convincing evidence that Meza is a danger to the community, as well as the evidence indicates that he is a risk of flight." Both were facing a mandatory minimum of 5 years imprisonment. Judge Counts further ordered Meza to serve 5 years supervised release and pay a $100 special assessment fee and pay a $30,000 fine. Stout busted with suspected meth. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Monahan's Police Department officers arrested Cody Michael Stout, age 42, of 207 Idaho Street, on charges of possessing suspected methamphetamines. According to MPD Captain Stormy Laws, quote, an officer was patrolling around the Microtelf Inn and Suites located at 813 Service Road around 1:54 a.m. when he observed a blue Chevy pickup parked in the handicapped parking spot without a placard or a license plate, end quote. The officer spoke to the driver and two female occupants in the vehicle. Stout was identified as the driver. Quote, the officer could smell marijuana emitting from the vehicle and conducted a search where he located suspected methamphetamine in the watch pocket of Stout's pants, he said. The suspected methamphetamine totaled approximately 1.3 grams, he added. Stout was subsequently arrested and charged with possession of a controlled substance, penalty group 1, greater than 1 gram, less than 4 grams. Bond was set at $10,000. Stout posted bail and was released. Alexander, world traveler before age 18. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. Diane Alexander had a long and roundabout journey before settling in and calling Monahan's home. She was born in Lawton, Oklahoma, to Leo D. Smith and Mary Lou Sanders Smith in 1943. Diane's dad was an Army private first class serving in World War II in France as General Patton's Jeep driver. Her mother was living in Oklahoma City during his military time. Quote, I was 2 years old before my dad saw me for the first time, Diane said. Diane's parents did not stay together, and she gained a stepdad when she was 8 years old. Her mother married Robert Lane, a sergeant in the Army, which was the beginning of several years of living around the world. Shortly after her mother's marriage to Lane, the family moved to Fort Riley, Kansas, as a temporary stopping point before shipping out to Greece. Sergeant Lane was a mechanic instructor whose job was teaching the Greek military how to work on their vehicles. Quote, we lived in a beautiful four-story house that was about a block from the Mediterranean Ocean for the year and a half we were stationed in Greece. The house was amazing, but the school was not much fun. We went to an English school, but had the meanest teacher on earth, Diane said. I remember we had goats for the lawn instead of lawnmowers, end quote. After leaving Greece, the Lane family moved to France, where the only available housing at the time was a one-room house with no bathroom. But the family didn't stay there long, as Diane's mother said that was totally unacceptable. So, a four-bedroom with indoor bathroom was found for the family in Beaugency, which was about 60 miles south of Paris. Quote, while we lived there, we had to ride a bus 3 miles each way to the American private school in Orleans. It made our days pretty long, said Diane. They were back in the States at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, for Diane's 7th and 8th grade school years, before moving to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, for Diane's freshman and sophomore years. Diane's two final school years were spent in Munich, Germany, where Diane was enrolled in school and graduated from Stuttgart-Ludwigsburg American High School. After graduation, at the tender age of 18 years old, Diane booked passage on the Army ship USS General W.O. Darby and took an 8-day voyage home to the States by herself. 5 days into the trip, a strong storm came up and for a few hours caused a very turbulent ride. Rough waves will cause a ship's doors to create a suction that they can't be easily opened. Quote, the captain came over the intercom and told us to stay out of the bathrooms during the turbulence. Well, guess where I was when the announcement was made? Yeah, I was in the shower. The door was stuck tight, and I yelled, but no one came. I was there in a rocking ship, locked in a bathroom with only a towel and my nightgown to keep me company. I kept trying to open the door and finally caught a minute when the suction let up and I got out, she laughed. While on the ship, Diane became friends with a young woman who was recently discharged from the Army and was on her way home, too. Quote, she had struck up a friendship with some of the kitchen workers, and we had one heck of a party in the kitchen the last night on the ship. It was an all-nighter, and we had a ball, she said. When the ship landed in New York City, the Army had someone there to pick Diane up and take her to the airport to catch a flight to Oklahoma City. Upon landing, Diane said, quote, my uncle was supposed to pick me up when I landed, but I spent close to 8 hours waiting for him because he was in a bowling tournament and was going to finish bowling. I was scared to death and went and hid in the restroom with a cleaning lady. End quote. After her uncle finally got through bowling and picked her up, she quickly made her way back to Lawton, Oklahoma, where she had relatives. Diane's introduction to West Texas was through a cousin who was a pilot. He flew up to Oklahoma and brought her to Odessa for a 2-week visit. But Diane wanted to go back to Oklahoma to stay with her grandmother. Diane and her future husband, Tom Jarrett, went to school together while in Germany, and their paths crossed again when he came home to Oklahoma after his time in basic training. Tom and Diane married in 1963 and moved to Georgia. When Tom shipped out to Korea, Diane went back to live in Lawton until his Korean tour was over, and during this time, their son Bobby was born. There was a stint at Fort Hood until Tom was sent to Vietnam. Diane and Bobby then went to Chowchilla, California to live with her mom and stepdad for the next 3.5 months until Tom's discharge. After Tom's discharge, they moved to Waco, where he worked at his uncle's backhoe service for the next 5 years. Diane's second son, John, was born in Waco before the couple moved on to Palestine in East Texas. The path to West Texas was being developed at this time because of Tom's job with Texas Oil and Gas in Pittsburgh, which opened the door to a transfer to Pecos. He worked in Pecos, but they lived in Monahans until her divorce. Diane and the boys went back to Oklahoma, but Bobby was entering his senior year at Monahans High School and wanted to finish school in Monahans, so he moved back and lived with Coach Dick Winder until graduation. Diane spent the next 10 years in Elgin, Oklahoma, working as a waitress at the Old Plantation Restaurant in Medicine Park, which is nestled in the Wichita Mountains, and home to 5 lakes, buffalo, deer, hiking, and camping, as well as the place Roy Rogers and Dale Evans spent their honeymoon. Bobby graduated from Sil Ross and joined the Army. After his tour was up, he came back to Monahans to coach and teach for the school district. John, too, had moved back to Monahans to live close to his brother. Diane came back to West Texas in the early 90s and lived with Odessa relatives while becoming a certified licensed skincare esthetician. She also became a certified nurse assistant, working as an emergency room and floor nurse at the Monahans Hospital. The day came when her car quit at the Sandhills Park coming back from an Odessa trip. One of the park administrators, who helped get her car taken care of, offered her a job at the park as a tour guide. Quote, I loved the job. I met lots of interesting people and loved telling them the history of the Sandhills Park. I worked there for 12 years until I retired, Diane said. Diane spent some of her retirement time at the Ward County Senior Center, where she and Milt Alexander became friends and shared a love for dancing. Quote, Milt and I were married over 6 years ago, and we have not looked back since then. We are very happy together, Diane said, while smiling at Milt.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.